up all night, yeah. Constant drinking and love songs. She got me up all night, yeah. Down and out with these love songs. She got me open all night, Got me open all night, hey.
Thank you, DJ Blaze, for another great show. Be sure to stick around at 7:30. The Council of Commissioners meeting will start, but right now it's time for Carol Murphy and Heartstock Radio.
Hey, this is John Conlon, host of Celtic Nations Radio, Rocky Road to Dublin. You're listening to KBMF LP Butte 102.5.
Support for KBMF comes from Butte Brewing, offering a variety of locally made microbrews at 465 East Galena in Uptown Butte. Open noon to 8 p.m. daily, Butte Brewing can be reached at 299-3959 or found on Facebook.
Hi, you're listening to Heartstock Radio, and this is Carol Murphy. Today we have Jenny Casson with us. But first, I need to remind you that you can reach us at heartstockradio@gmail.com. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. And just a little bit, Jenny's going to be back and tell us all about who she is and what she does. I'm really excited, and some excellent information, especially if you're a woman in business and looking for money. Who's not looking for money, right? Sit back, listen, and enjoy. We'll be right back.
This land was made for you and me. As I was walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me.
Hi, it's Carol Murphy. You're listening to Heartstock Radio. I'm really happy that you're here today. And the topic of discussion is going to be raising capital for your business. And Jenny is our guest, Jenny Casson, and she has a book that's coming out soon. Title is Raise Capital on Your Own Terms, How to Find Your Business Without Selling Your Soul. I love that title. Hi, Jenny. Can you please tell our guests who you are and what you do?
Sure. I'm an attorney and a capital raising coach for entrepreneurs that want to bring funding into their business in a way that allows them to really stay true to their values and their goals. So it doesn't require them to change who they are or what they want to do with their business.
So when do you expect your book to come out? And I know that you have a class coming up as well. Can you talk just a little bit more about that? And just in case our listeners really need your help. I know I do.
Absolutely. So the book is coming out officially at the beginning of October, but it is actually already printed. I'm going to be seeing the copies tomorrow. I'm very excited. Mm-hmm. And so you can order it, anywhere you order books, and you should get it hopefully in the next few weeks. And then, yes, I do host events, especially for women entrepreneurs. There are 3-day training events where you learn everything you need to know about your options for raising money for your business. And we really dive into some of the nitty-gritty stuff so that you can become literate on all of the different options and have the confidence to choose the option that works best for you, because you understand all of the different ways of raising money and which one is going to work the best for you. And that's, so it's next week, actually. And if you want to learn more about that event, there's a website, fundandfuelyourdreams.com.
So just how underrepresented are women when it comes to raising capital? I've heard some horrible, horrible statistics that we lag behind our male counterparts.
Absolutely. So there's many different ways of raising money. So there's a way of raising money called venture capital, and that's kind of a very sort of has a lot of people know a lot about venture capital these days because it's been in the news quite a bit lately. A lot of people probably heard that in this world of venture capital, which is kind of the type of funding that will often go to tech companies, you know, companies that are going to grow really fast and then maybe be purchased by Google or Facebook. So venture capital funds those kinds of businesses, and it's a type of funding that, you know, has a very specific model. They love to invest in the high growth businesses and bet on making, you know, multiple billions of dollars, you know, when that company goes public or gets sold. And in that realm of fundraising, only 3% of the money goes to women. So it's pretty horrible. And, you know, if you didn't hear in the news lately about the other things that happen to women when they try to raise money in that world, it can be pretty unpleasant. There's, you know, a lot of, unfortunately, you know, sexism and groping and propositioning, and just it's a really unfriendly world for women. And I have lots of clients who have kind of dipped a toe into that world and have confirmed that it is really not fun for women. I have some clients that just were in a Silicon Valley accelerator program, and they said every single speaker, every single mentor, every single coach, every single person in that was, you know, running that program was a man. And they've seen a lot of unpleasantness towards the women in the program. So anyway, that's really unfortunate. But the good news is that's actually just such a tiny drop in the bucket of where you can get funding. So I sometimes tell my clients, yes, it's horrible that women only get 3% of that money, but in a way, it's almost a good thing, because that money often comes with so many strings attached that you almost don't want that money. So I almost say, you know, you're lucky you're not getting that money. Unfortunately, though, in other realms as well, there are also disparities. You know, when it comes to bank loans, women don't get as much money and they're not approved as often. When women raise money from any kind of source of funding for their businesses, they do tend to raise less or not raise at all, which is really sad because it's very hard to run a business without some funding. I mean, there are some businesses where you don't need funding. You're able to, you know, just get enough customers that where you're, you know, you're breaking even, you're paying all your expenses, but that isn't super common. It's way more common that the business needs some funding to kind of get you to break even or allow you to buy that great, you know, website developer or accountant that'll get you to the point where you finally can become, you know, grow your business to the point where it reaches sustainability.
You mentioned some strings that come with the venture capital. What are some of those strings? I think this is really important to know.
Yeah, so that type of funding can be very hyped up as a great thing. You know, nothing better could happen to you than to get that kind of money. And I think there probably are some cases where that may be true. People call it the smart money, because the idea is that you're getting money from a group of investors who have a lot of expertise and can really help you make your business more successful and grow faster. But unfortunately, the reality isn't often so rosy. I think it's more common that, first of all, that you definitely are going to be giving up control if you raise that kind of money. You really do have to let those investors get a board seat, have the right to veto certain decisions. Everyone says when you bring on venture capital money, you're pretty much bringing on your boss. So that alone can be pretty unpleasant. But some people say, you know what, I'm willing to do that because we're going to grow so fast and we're going to make so much money and we're going to be so happy that it's worth it. But unfortunately, it's more often than not that the venture capital funding runs the business into the ground. So because they're pushing you to grow as fast as possible, 80 to 90% of companies that receive that kind of funding are expected to fail. That's actually part of the model. So the chance that if you get that funding and you that if you get that, the chances that you'll actually be a successful business that gets sold and everyone makes multiple millions of dollars is actually quite low with that type of funding. And then, of course, the hell that you have to go through to get to that point is, you know, they're notorious for requiring you to work, you know, really long hours and meet deadlines that are really crazy. And so I don't think it's a great fit for most businesses, and very few businesses actually do take that kind of funding. Only 6% of the Inc. 500, which are the fastest growing businesses in the country, actually took venture capital. So there's really not a lot of evidence that it is, you know, a really great source of funding, but it does continue to get a lot of attention and hype. Because there's a few cases where there was a huge home run, as they call it, and people got very rich. And so those kinds of cases get a lot of attention. And so those are the things that people think of when they think of that kind of funding.
So in just a moment, let's talk a little bit more about some strategies. But first, why is it so important that this be turned around and women have a more equal representation when it comes to available capital and funding for their companies?
Yeah, well, I mean, if we want our small businesses and just our business community in general to be successful, women are a really big part of that. They're actually starting businesses at a higher rate than men. And an undercapitalized business is just, it's not good for anyone. It's not good for the founder. It's not good for the customers. It's not good for the community where they're located. It's a real hardship. Employees, you know, are underpaid or payroll can't be met. So it just benefits everyone when businesses can be properly capitalized so that they can achieve their full potential. You know, I meet so many women entrepreneurs who have a beautiful vision. Maybe they've even been in business for a while. I don't only work with startups. I work with people at all different stages. And so many women entrepreneurs have a beautiful vision. They've achieved some milestones, maybe. They're serving customers. They're creating jobs. But they're really struggling because they just don't have the resources they need to achieve their full potential. And it we're all robbed of a lot of great things when that happens. So I just think it's something that would benefit everybody if women could have the funding that would allow them to take their businesses to the next level, serve more people, have more sustainable lives for themselves and their families and their communities. There's really no downside to it. And it is true that, you know, not all businesses succeed. So, you know, business funding, you know, investors can lose money when they invest in businesses, but, you know, it has been shown by so many studies that women do tend to be better stewards of investment funds. So it's, you know, the more they're able to get that funding and, you know, grow their businesses, the investors are probably going to benefit quite a bit as well.
So we're talking ripple effect. It can work both ways.
Absolutely, yeah.
Both a negative and a positive. Everybody either loses or wins.
Right.
So it behooves everyone to work on this issue and turn it around. So what are some strategies aside from the venture capital route?
Yeah, so venture capital really is such a small player in the overall world of business finance. It gets so much attention, but it's a tiny, tiny player. So what I like to tell people is that about half the population of our country is made up of investors. And people are sometimes surprised to hear that. But it is true that more than half of the country is an investor, which means they have money in the stock market, in a 401k. And so there's all this money. Most of it is tied up in the public market. So, you know, in mutual funds, that in publicly traded companies. But there are many ways that people can shift some of their investments into small businesses. It's not as well known as I wish it were, but it is absolutely possible. So, for example, I could take, you know, 1% or 5% of my retirement account and invest it in small businesses in my own community, just as an example. So when people start to realize that, all of a sudden they realize there are so many sources of funding out there. So maybe it's your customers, maybe it's people in your community, maybe it's people who are just passionate about the same things you are. These are all people that can become investors in your business. And they don't have to be super wealthy, because if you're raising several hundred thousand, you know, I've actually raised money myself several times, I've raised over $1 million over the years, and I've had hundreds of investors. And people have invested $1,000, $25,000, $100,000, whatever amount that for them was an amount that they felt comfortable investing. So if you open up the investment opportunity to more people, it's just amazing how much money you can bring in. And these are people that wouldn't even probably think of themselves as investors. They wouldn't label themselves as investors, but they are. And they can invest in your business.
So how would I, as an investor, since I have a retirement account and I want to put 1% of my money into local small businesses or large businesses, how would I make that happen? What are the nuts and bolts of that?
Yeah, well, it's tricky because it often has to be initiated by the business owner. It's a little harder for an investor to initiate that because there are some legal hoops that need to be jumped through before an entrepreneur can take investment from community resident, you know, from regular folks. So what you could do is you could start learning about those businesses that are doing that. You know, there's some websites you can go to find some businesses that are raising money from, you know, a larger number of smaller investors in using various strategies. And you can also even just talk to some of the businesses that you love and tell them that this is a possibility and kind of help them work through the process that would allow them to be able to take money from you and from other community residents.
So we're going to talk about that some more. But first, we're going to remind you that our call-in number is 406-533-5785. And you can call in and ask Jenny your important questions. Right now, we're going to take just a little break and we will be right back.
This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream Waters. This land was made for you and me. As I was walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me.
Hi, we're back. This is Carol Murphy, and you're listening to Heartstock Radio. I'm so happy that you're here. Our call-in number, again, is 406-533-5785. Please call in, and Jenny would love to answer your questions. Let's talk a little bit more about that same issue, Jenny. If we answered that question, you know, if I was an investor, how would I find those companies? How do companies find those investors who'd uh-huh. like to take their money and invest it locally into smaller businesses?
Yes, yes. So we are definitely trying to grow the number of small businesses that know that that is an option, so that hopefully someday investors will easily be able to find those opportunities in their own communities. But basically what the entrepreneur needs to do is to start to think about, you know, once you start opening up your mind to who a potential investor might be, you can really start to narrow down who would be the people that I would like to approach as potential investors. And that's going to really vary a lot for different kinds of businesses. You know, some businesses, they already have a lot of customers that absolutely love them, so their customers are going to be a great source of investment. Other businesses are just starting out, and they may not even have any customers yet, and they can't even get customers until they raise money because they can't open the business without money. So then they have to think more broadly, who might really support what I'm doing? Maybe it's people. So I had one client that was opening a grocery store in a low-income neighborhood that hadn't had a grocery store for many, many years. And in that case, it was people in that community who, you know, who either lived there and really wanted to see the grocery store open, or people in wealthier parts of that area who supported the idea of bringing a wonderful grocery store into a neighborhood that had no grocery store. You know, so it was more of a values driven investment. And it could be maybe your suppliers, you know, maybe you're working with a lot of, like I have one client who takes used coffee grounds and turns it into fertilizer. So maybe the best people for her to talk to would be people who run coffee shops and want to be part of this program to, you know, to salvage the used coffee grounds and, you know, benefit from the financial, you know, success that's going to come from that. Plus just being able to say, I was part of this thing that's really good for the environment because it's diverting waste from the waste stream. So there's just so many different options. And I've been helping people do this now for 11 years. And what I find is I have never seen anyone use this method who hasn't raised the money, because when you open it up to everyone, it's just a matter of time before you find the people who are going to say yes and going to be thrilled to invest. Now, there are some legal hoops that have to be jumped through. As I mentioned before, it is a highly regulated activity. There are both state and federal laws governing how you can raise money from investors. So you do have to, you know, have some help in that arena. My book explains some of the basics with that, so that you can maybe you may be able to do it without a lawyer if you choose a fairly simple strategy. But that's the only caveat is once you kind of figure out who you want to target, you do have to first understand what your legal strategy is going to be and how you can avoid breaking the law. Also, you want to really design how your investors are investing. There's so many different ways that people can invest. So they could lend you money. You know, I have one client that does produce delivery, and their customers lend them money, and the customers are paid back. The interest is paid in the form of credits towards organic produce instead of in cash. Or maybe you could offer your investors some equity, meaning ownership in your company. And some people think like, oh no, I don't want to offer equity because I don't want to give up control of my company. But what they don't realize is that it is possible to sell equity in your company without giving up any control, because there's something called non-voting equity. So, you know, you have to really know the options of what you can offer to investors and choose the offering that's going to work best for your situation. And again, my book does cover all those different choices. And I actually take people through a 5-step process to choose what to offer to their investors.
So that brings me to an important question that I actually meant to ask a little earlier, but what is your background? I know that you are an attorney, and how did you get into this field? It's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. I feel so lucky because it was very, you know, I never would have guessed that I would be doing this kind of work after law school. So after law school, I was very passionate about, you know, changing the world and, you know, righting the wrongs and being a fighter for justice, which I still am. And so back then I said, I'm going to go work at a nonprofit when I get out of law school, because business is pretty much evil. You know, business is raping and pillaging the world. I need to go work for a nonprofit if I'm going to do good in the world. So I went and worked at this nonprofit that did projects in a low-income community. So like builds affordable housing and does, you know, job training and childcare programs and programs for seniors. So I went and worked there. And interestingly, they actually were very entrepreneurial. So they had started a bunch of businesses. And so that was kind of the first time I was really exposed to the idea that there doesn't have to be such a big distinction between nonprofit and for-profit. There are many nonprofits that are entrepreneurial and do business and, you know, sell goods and services and make money. And there's also lots of for-profits that are mission-driven and they're making money, but they're also doing good in the world. So once I got exposed to that idea, I was very excited by that. You know, people call that social enterprise or mission-driven business. And ever since then, I've always worked with those kinds of businesses. And I define it really broadly. You know, you don't have to be, you know, your entire business doesn't have to be about changing the world for me to consider you a mission-driven business. You know, maybe you're a pie shop, maybe you're a restaurant, maybe you're a, you run summer camps, whatever it is, you know. If you care about the impact of your business on your workers, on your suppliers, on the community, on the environment, and you're including things in your business activities that positively impact all those areas, then I consider you a mission-driven business. So I love working with those businesses. There's more and more of them, you know, and so many people have mission-driven businesses and don't even call them that. It just comes so naturally to them to use their business for good in some way. So I love working with those kinds of entrepreneurs. And so anyway, I was at that nonprofit for 11 years. I left 11 years ago and started focusing more on for-profit businesses. And that's when I really learned about the law governing fundraising for, you know, when you're raising money from investors. So before that, I was really focused on grants and donations because I was at a nonprofit. But then I found out, oh, there's this whole other way that you can bring money into your social enterprise, and it is highly regulated. So I'm going to learn everything I can about the laws governing how businesses can bring money in from investors. And so I learned there are actually many, many ways to do it. And unfortunately, a lot of lawyers only know one kind of cookie cutter way, but I learned all of them. So I help my clients, you know, understand all of the different options and choose the one that works best for them.
So how does this compare to the new type of crowdfunding where rather than getting a perk, like on Indiegogo, for example, somebody wants to give you money for a startup, they get in mm-hmm. exchange for that a perk, which is usually right. a product. How is uh-huh. this different from equity crowdfunding where folks, anybody can give you money, only instead of a perk, they're getting equity in the company? Is that what you're talking about, the same type of investment?
That is one of the tools in the toolbox. So some of my clients use, you call it equity crowdfunding. I call it investment crowdfunding because you can offer any kind of investment. It doesn't have to be equity. It could be debt. So yes, some of my clients use investment crowdfunding as their strategy for raising money from investors. And that's actually been legal for decades. But in 2012, a law called the Jobs Act was passed, and that made it easier and cheaper and faster to do it. So it's becoming, you know, more and more companies now are using that strategy to raise money. And when you use that strategy, you can publicly advertise the fact that you're looking for investors. You can, you know, anyone can invest. You can set the minimum investment really low. So that's definitely one strategy that a lot of my clients use, but it's not the only one. There's many, many different ways that you can, you know, reach out to investors.
So I wanted to talk a little bit more about a recurring topic with some of our other guests, and that is the current political environment. How do you feel this is impacting your work and the work that a lot of women who have startups or who are in business currently?
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like a lot of people are feeling more called than ever to step up and contribute what they can contribute and what they feel they were, you know, is their gift to give to the world. I feel like people are, you know, a lot of people are feeling like I can no longer kind of sit back and sort of procrastinate about going out and doing that thing that I know is the gift that I was born to give to the world. I feel like so many people, probably everybody, you know, there's something that they're really good at, that they love doing, that benefits so many people. And if they just had the time and the money, they could do it and it would just benefit so many people. And I feel like when we are in such kind of a political crisis and chaos, I feel like more people are kind of saying, okay, I'm doing it, you know, I'm not going to wait any longer. And I feel like investors also are more, more excited about supporting businesses that are doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just kind of a sense of urgency, yes. You know, like we can't wait any longer to do the things that the world needs.
And speaking of urgency, we have run out of time. Jenny, tell folks how they may contact you, please.
Yes. Yeah, so my website is jennycasson.com, and I have lots of resources there. You can actually, if you go there, you can download 2 chapters from my book for free. I have other resources too, lots of tools and things to help you figure out your capital raising strategy. So go check it out.
Thanks, Jenny. It's been great hearing the wealth of knowledge that you have, and this is going to help a lot of people and women. All of us can benefit. Thank you so much.
Thank you.